Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Joe Quatron. He is an innovative marketing leader, fractional CMO, ex-Audi Jaguar strategist, and a podcast co-host. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you, Ajay. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And it is a great opportunity for us to learn from you, from none other than someone who has worked on the Audi and Jaguar strategy, social media strategy. So there'll be a lot of learning from you. And so we'll be talking about all this in the backdrop of content marketing and social media. Excellent. So my first question is to understand from you, Joe, if you look at the Audi strategy back 17 years back and now.
Yeah.
Now, apart from the platforms and a few other things, would you do the strategy part in today's time the same way or look at it much more differently? I want to understand it. You know, it will take us back and at the present.
Sure.
So help us understand. Although your minds and insights will come through.
Yeah, that. Yeah, 100%. I would do the exact same thing that we did back then. I would do it now. And mainly just because it was based on being aggressive and innovation. So Scott Keogh was our CMO, and he was really the principal kind of architect of making sure that anything that we did in marketing, whether it was, you know, TV advertising, you know, Super Bowl advertising or whatever, social media, digital websites, SEO, anything that we did, he wanted us to be the first. And if we couldn't be the first, he wanted us to be the best. And he had a tremendous competitive spirit. So a lot of the things we did were predicated on just kind of really, you know, there wasn't a lot of things like ROI back then, measuring content marketing and social media. So what we tried to do was we tried to get on the platforms before all of our competitors and really start building a relationship with our consumers.
Right, right. And in terms of the present that is giving you much more additional things to strategize with, what would you choose from all those things that we have in front of us today?
Yeah, so I mean, similar to back in those early days, there's a lot of, you know, kind of ground to be plowed, if you will, but brand marketers tend to be a little bit lazier. They tend to try to do things to consolidate and, you know, do as much as they can to consolidate everything and spend less time and money on those things. Whereas the opportunity right in front of us, it doesn't care how efficient brands want to be. It's a supply and demand game. I'm sure your audience understands the, you know, supply side economics, right? So if you look at TikTok or you look like YouTube, Instagram, you know, these platforms that have vertical video as a feature set, those are the most predominant, you know, platforms and features in the world right now when it comes to consumer attention. And so if you understand supply and demand, that means, you know, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, they are incentivizing you based on how much content you share with the platform. So the more content you share, the more benefits you unlock. And typically that means more reach and engagement on your accounts. The influencers know this, but sometimes the brands think that, oh, because I'm Coca-Cola or because I'm whoever, I could just throw my weight around or I could throw my advertising dollars around and that will equal success. That doesn't really work that way with the technology companies and the platforms. They want brands, influencers, and everyday people submitting as much content as humanly possible to the platforms because they know that they have to hold on to your attention. They can't do that if you don't have content in there.
Right, right. Now, coming to the present part, how do you look at this present state of, you know, marketing and communications, content marketing and social media? Is it that we have got enough number of platforms to play with, or is it, you know, that the numbers are there, but we have very, very long, you know, a lot of restrictions around in terms of, you know, saturation, oversaturation, or public perception around social media, its negative impacts and all. I want you to help us understand, for a lot of, you have a lot of experience in this line, you are doing it even today. For a lot of people, especially young people who look at this say, marketing job or into a social media manager? How should they look at it? Even for a small business also, how should they look at all these things? So all these inputs from you on the state of this content marketing and social media will be a lot of insights for everyone.
Yeah, so the way they should look at it is, this is the modern day version of branding, right? So these social media channels where you can put your content out for free and gain some sort of traction with an intended audience, that's an incredibly powerful tool for a lot of small businesses, a lot of individuals. I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about, is there too many platforms? Is everything oversaturated? What are we going to do about the mental health stuff? I think that stuff is going to sort itself out. The fact of the matter is, there's going to continue to be more platforms and more devices as technology scales and proliferates. We're not going to have less of these things. We're going to have more of them. What I think you'll notice is that there's going to be more attention and education paid towards individuals understanding how to interact with these devices and how to not actually allow it to turn into addiction. And so, I think kind of back to your original question, I think that's really the landscape as I see it. I don't think we need a mass regulation across all countries. I don't think we need anything that looks like, authoritarianism and trying to prevent us from seeing or saying things. I think what we need is more people understanding the technology, understanding how powerful it is, how it can help you, but how it can hurt you as well.
Right, right. In terms of, but the number of tools, there are many number of tools. And some people say, for like people who create content, they say try and be as many platforms, not in a negative sense, but so that, for example, Blue Sky, now it's open to all. Twitter, yeah. It was open to all, but in a way there has been, some only the blue tick and all that stuff. So how do I choose a platform in today's time when I'm trying to do something, either as a marketer, as a small business? That landscape is quite confusing. So I don't know how it went. Then there was this whole stuff around build your own property, build your own website, and build your own newsletter. Some things, website is still there, but a lot of things run out of steam all of a sudden. What is your input, insight into how should one look at these many tools? How should they be picky, or they should just go with picking as many? I just want to understand for the audience.
Yeah, I think you need to start by not necessarily obsessing over the channels and start obsessing over where your customer is. So what do I mean by that? Well, there was an app many moons ago called Vine, which was a short form video app. And everybody thought it was crazy. It was pretty cool. There was a lot of influencers that rose to prominence on it. Some people stayed on the sidelines. They didn't want to interact because it was so weird and new and they didn't know how to create content for it. But those folks that did actually dabble in, become good at making vines, were the people that actually figured out how to make TikToks when it came out. So it's less to me about channels. It's about how consumers like to interact with technology. So there's a difference between, in-feed, static images and carousels versus stories, which you tap through, versus what I call vertical video, viral vertical video, the TikTok-like objects that you scroll through, reels, shorts, things of that nature. Think about the experience for the consumer. So, the reason why I think TikTok has become so dominant and a lot of platforms have followed suit by creating these full bleed, vertical video assets that you scroll up on, is because it's a much better experience for consumers than anything else. And I would imagine, no matter what happens to TikTok here in the US from a privacy perspective, or what happens, on YouTube or any of these other platforms, vertical video is something that's going to continue to proliferate and be adopted by many, many other social networks as they come about. So you don't have to, I don't think you have to be on every channel. I would never give anybody that advice, but you do have to know how all the channels work and where your consumer's at. So, even though like you as a small business or a large business or whoever, you might not have a lot of audience members on, let's say, like a Pinterest or something like that, right? But that doesn't mean, so just because you don't go out there and put a ton of content on Pinterest doesn't mean you, you as a marketer or a practitioner shouldn't know how Pinterest operates. It's relevant for a certain segment of society and certain brands can do really well there. It's just that maybe your brand doesn't. So I think that's something you have to keep in mind is you, your brands don't have to be everywhere, but as a practitioner, you should understand enough about all of the platforms because you may not be at that company for the rest of your life. You might go out and create a different company and Pinterest might become super relevant to you. So I'd say if you wanted to cover all your bases, you should understand and probably be active on, you know, and I'm talking mainly from a US perspective here because that's what I know the most about, although I have worked in a global capacity. But I would say you should be pretty active or at least have a point of view on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at the bare minimum because that's those are the platforms that have the most scale. I think Facebook is like the passport of the internet. So most people, there's like 2 billion people on it. So it is effective and you can certainly benefit from the targeting and the ad spend on Facebook. So you should be aware of Facebook and you should have a plan of attack for Facebook as well. But then there's all kind of, if those are your bullseye platforms, right? If you're looking at a dartboard and that was the middle of it, it's those four platforms. What come outside of that? What's the second ring? What's the third ring? I think you throw like a Snap in there. I think you throw Pinterest in there. You know, you could throw Blue Sky, Be Real, all different types of platforms. You might even, maybe you will even want to throw some SMS platforms in there like Telegraph and, you know, some community-based platforms in there like Twitch and stuff like that. But those are really fringe, very niche audiences that are not going to be for most brands.
Right, right, Joe. You, in fact, talking of, you know, vertical videos, YouTube is now very strongly into this. And they have just come out. So they want more and more people to try out those vertical lines.
And that's the good thing about, so the thing I love about the vertical video, but in our country, we have TikTok, we have YouTube Shorts, and we have Facebook and Instagram Reels, right? Those are the four premier vertical video platforms. But the beauty of those is, you know, if you do want to think about how do you consolidate your efforts, how do you act more efficiently with your time? You could do what you're doing, Ajay. You could go out and create a live stream platform or a podcast platform or something like that. And you could take the longer form content, cut it up into short vertical clips and, you know, have your podcast guests distribute it out. You could distribute, you could see it's a lot easier to scale your efforts if you start with long form and go to short form. But, you know, you still have to have the personality. You have to be good at building an audience, all those kind of things. But it does help to be able to do those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good insight there. There is a lot of, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people will be thinking, especially for people like us who can, you know, use these shorts to gain much more visibility for our content because it will go to a huge number of people on shorts, just like it does on Reels.
Well, I used to do the, I don't know if your audience is familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk, but I used to run his mastermind course, which was the 4Ds. And one of the things that we always told our paying customers was, you know, like as we started off this conversation talking about supply and demand, if TikTok's looking for you to supply them with 3 to 5 TikToks a day, that could seem very overwhelming to the average TikTok user, right? Or YouTube user or whoever, you know, Facebook Reels, Instagram Reels. If what they want, if supply and demand means me, the creator, supplies you, the platform, with 3 to 5 pieces of content a day because that's how much content your platform demands of its users in order for you to give me scale. If I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, man, that's overwhelming. That's, you're talking about one channel that I need to do 3 pieces of content for. But if you think about it in a way where, you know, I'm going to hit my beats and rhythms. I'm going to make my long form content every day, every week, every month, no matter what. And then I'm going to take that content and turn it into my 3 to 5 pieces a day. Then it seems a lot less daunting. Then you have to figure out how to create a podcast, not necessarily a TikTok channel. You know what I mean?
Right. Right, Joe. Now, talking of, you know, social media, what about LinkedIn? How do we look at this particular platform? Till some time back, it had this creator ability. Now it's not, it's saying that we have realized a few things, and although these facilities will be there, but we are removing the creator mode and all that. So in between, you know, there were a lot of content which was, we would see more on Facebook, not on LinkedIn. Yeah. And so now people don't know whether you should, you can put those old sort of content, or it has become much more serious. From a small business perspective, or from someone who is in between, don't know, how should you look at a platform like LinkedIn to go in or not go in the same manner? I am confused a bit.
Yeah, so I think one thing that you have to consider is, you know, you might want to lower your expectations, right? So like in life, you know, as in business, most of the time where your expectations are dictates how happy or sad or mad or whatever you are, right? And so just because LinkedIn's moving a few things around doesn't mean it's not an absolutely viable platform. So one of the things you have to remember is LinkedIn's probably more of a signal of the strength of your reputation than it is about how influential you are as a person, right? People that are going to LinkedIn from, let's say, Instagram, let's say you're a famous celebrity on Instagram and you pull in 13 million followers, you can come to LinkedIn and you're going to have a fraction of that. You might have 500,000, 200,000, whatever the case may be. The context is slightly different, right? You're known not necessarily for your prowess as an engaging celebrity or a singer or whatever the case may be. You're understood for your business philanthropy or for your strategic prowess or whatever the case may be. And there's not as much of a tendency for users on LinkedIn to scroll mindlessly through LinkedIn content. Sure, people are looking at it, but they're not looking at it for as many hours as you're, you know, I've seen some statistics that suggest that Gen Z spends 9 hours a day on their phone. And millennials spend 6 hours a day on their phone. And I'm sure it's even less for Gen X and even less for boomers. But what you can guarantee they're not doing is spending 75, 80% of their time on LinkedIn. That might be a couple minutes here and there in a day. But it doesn't mean that from a business to business contact, those 13 minutes you might spend on LinkedIn a day aren't going to provide you with some valuable brands or valuable influencers that you're taking a look at. So what I would encourage people to do is, think about it in terms of like, it's going to be impactful, but in ways you couldn't imagine. So the ROI is not necessary. The ROI of publishing content to LinkedIn is not necessarily, I'm doing this because I want to have 35,000 followers. I'm doing this because I want a stronger network, and I want those network connections to lead to business outside of content. Right. So, and I've gotten plenty of business from my consulting practice, just, you know, chatting people up on LinkedIn and making sure, and people that come to me via my content. In fact, I noticed the other day, I had gone through a little bit of a valley of content creation for LinkedIn. I hadn't posted something in like 4 or 5 months. And you know, that's just because life got busy. Me and my wife had our fourth kid, and we're, you know, like, obviously my business, my new consulting firm is brand new because I left Gary back in July. So I'm really, you know, new kid, new business, trying to figure things out. I'm not posting as regular, but then I got back into a habit last week, and I posted 5 straight days, and that those 5 straight days generated, even though they weren't the highest numbers I've ever had from a likes and a comments and shares perspective, they still generated like 11,000 impressions. And I got those 11,000 impressions for free. I mean, the only thing I did was I spent 10 minutes of my time each day for 5 days coming up with the idea for a post. So 10 minutes a day for 5 days, 50 minutes, less than an hour, right? So maybe the investment of that, if you equate my time to money, you know, between 100 and 300 US dollars, but I got 11,000 impressions out of it. So, you know, I come from the world of advertising. That's a pretty good deal, you know? And if you're not creating, if you're not putting anything out, you're not getting any impressions. So even though, and back to the original way I started answering your questions, level setting your expectations, my expectations for LinkedIn 2 years ago were that if I spent an hour writing content for LinkedIn, I was going to generate 20, 30,000 impressions per post, right? So I'm not getting anywhere near the level of reach I used to get, but it's still free. So why am I complaining about it? So as a small business practitioner, if I do that every week for an entire year, that's 520,000 impressions that I got for free or for negligible amount of money, you know? So I would just encourage people to think about what they're trying to get out of the platform and set their expectations in the right place.
Right, right. Joe, now in terms of budget, if you are working for a big brand and you have got good amount of budget, and if you are working for a small firm or for yourself, Does your whole perspective change in terms of how does it change in terms of, you know, and if I have a little bit of money, I'm advising someone, how should I make use of it in the best manner possible? I want to understand the mindset, because sometimes you will have a brand with you which can spend money. Sometimes you will not have a brand which can spend that much of money. But yeah. They all have the expectations, maybe a little less or a little more. But how do you manage those two things, you know, when you are handling both the accounts perhaps at the same time?
I mean, I've managed brands like Budweiser and Jaguar, and out of that, these brands are spending tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year in advertising. Down to I've helped brands that, you know, are making $1 million a year on the small business side and on the consulting side. So I see it from both angles. And what I would suggest to your smaller business friends out there is think about how amazing of a time this is, right? And yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have the money of Budweiser and Ford and Jaguar and all those different brands, but think about, you know, a lot of those brands, they waste a lot of their money. And I think the reason why they waste a lot of their money is because they're not you, right? If you think about a brand like Budweiser, it's been around for like 17 generations. You know how hard it is to understand what the soul of that brand is when you're 17 generations removed from the founding of it? So you as a small business owner have a golden opportunity. You are, in many cases, the founder of your brand. So now think about the potential and opportunity for your brand. Like, let's just pretend that your brand is going to be a massive brand one day and everybody all around the world is going to know it and love it and whatever. What do you have to do to get to that place, right? So you should be thinking about, how do I continue to refine my messaging, my positioning, my brand voice, how my brand shows up, how it looks, how it feels, who my consumer is? Have a really, really solid idea of who you are and who your customer is and how you're positioned to compete with brands for their attention. And you can turn into a Budweiser or a Jaguar one day. So I would, if I have a little bit of money, if I have limited funds, until I understand my consumer, my brand inside and out, my brand purpose, my brand vision, all those things, and understand the market fit, I'm not really moving off of that until I have those things nailed down. So if I spend $5, $10, $15,000, it doesn't matter. I'm going to work on that religiously. And then if I come out of that and I still have some money to spend on distribution, then I think it really just matters what industry I'm in and where my consumers are and how do I reach them most efficiently. So if I'm a business to business type of proposition, you know, obviously I'm probably going to be paying more attention to, you know, LinkedIn, probably PR, some various different, you know, channels that I can reach them efficiently. I'm also thinking about influencing the influencers. So, you know, one hidden strategy that a lot of people don't really understand is, you know, how do I influence up? And what I mean by that is, you know, this, I used to live in California before I moved to Nashville, Tennessee. And it almost overnight, it felt like out there, you went from like the top three luxury car brands being, you know, BMW, Audi, and Mercedes, to all of a sudden Tesla came out of nowhere and took over. And nowadays it's like Tesla and Mercedes. And I think Lexus was in there for a little while as well. But there's a reason why in 2021, when I left, you know, LA, you could drive around the streets and you'd see far more Teslas than you'd see like Lexuses and stuff like that. And the reason was, Tesla never even advertised. They don't put any money into advertising. So you're like, why are Teslas important? Why did they all of a sudden take over the largest car market in the United States? And it's because they appeal to the younger kids, right? All electric kids are, you know, the kids are into environmentalism and all that kind of stuff. And it was cool to drive a Tesla. Well, LA is a very, you know, parts of LA, especially like Beverly Hills and Westwood, are very affluent. The kids would tell their parents, I'm not going to be seen dead driving around in your Lexus or your old Cadillac or whatever you're driving. You need to buy a Tesla. And the parents, wanting to be cool and wanting to be hip, they're influenced by the younger generation. They go out and buy a Tesla so they can be cool to their kids. So if I make it out of that brand development stage where I'm really kind of figuring out who I am, I'm really trying to laser in on where my audience is and how can I reach them. And then I'm going to just play my levers and I'm play my card. If I'm a business to consumer brand and my audience is young people, I'm going to go heavy on TikTok. I'm probably going to go all in on TikTok.
Right, right. Joe, one more question on this whole content marketing thing on social media marketing is about the life of a social media manager. Now, the tools that you generally talk about, those are also available to your client and potential clients. Yeah. How do you create a life for yourself in a way that, okay, the customer or the client will find a value in you, especially not the bigger brand, because they always outsource their work. But what about the smaller ones who will think, oh, I can do a lot, get one person inside into my office, or I can do a lot of things through the use of artificial intelligence. On the other hand, from the client side also, how should they look at that? Even if I've got, say, all the social artificial intelligence tools in my hand, I would still be able to make better use of my time, better use of my effort and expertise of a social media manager. How do you look at it from both sides?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I think I'm making sure my organization understands there's a difference between community management and customer service. Those are two fundamentally different roles. I wouldn't necessarily want my community manager to spend their time thinking about product issues or where you can find things and doing like the blocking and tackling that a customer service professional could do. I think the role of a community manager is inherently more strategic and more creative, and it should map back to your efforts as a brand. So I'll kind of establish that first and foremost. I think you should have a perspective on both, but they should probably exist separately and maybe, you know, interact with each other, but not necessarily be governed. You know, community manager shouldn't be governing customer service and vice versa. I think they're two different roles. And the more you bifurcate them out, the easier it's going to be for both of them. In terms of the way I would think about the utilization of artificial intelligence from a community management perspective, I've already started thinking about that. So within my I'm an early adopter of technology. I've always have been. So, and I also, once upon a time, my experience in social media and content marketing dates back to like the mid to late 2000s. So I understand the technology side of this, like inside out and backwards. And one of the reasons that I was good straight out of the gates with ChatGPT or long language text AI platforms was because in those early days of social media, when we wanted to understand the conversation that was happening on the social web, we would have to use Boolean syntax inside of these listening tools to really create queries and find out what was being said about our brand on the web. And then we'd have to constantly refine that conversation to actually make the search queries relevant to what we were doing on an everyday basis and be able to create reporting and report back to the CMO or the CEO or whoever. So when ChatGPT came out, I think the reason why a lot of people struggle to use it is because they think of everything in their life like editing a word processor document or editing a PowerPoint or something like that. It's this object that you're constantly trying to make perfect. Whereas, you know, something like a ChatGPT takes the infinite and makes it identifiable, right? And the only way to do that is by banging away on your keyboard and constantly refining the search query. It's not about making things beautiful all the time. It's about using language to create things. And so I knew that straight out of the gates, and it took me like 5 minutes to learn how to use ChatGPT because of it. But one of the things that I started doing when I got into my own business practice and I didn't have to necessarily be handcuffed by using the people or the technology inside of the agency world was I started creating 12-month social media content calendars and editorial calendars for my clients. And it wasn't down to the level of like the individual post on social media, right? Like that wasn't the point. The point was, is that your average social media manager, they've got so much stuff going on in the day-to-day, they get overwhelmed at the macro and the strategy side of things. So what I wanted to do first was, all right, let's create an editorial calendar for this brand that shows me, let's say, 12 months worth of blog posts, 12 months worth of podcast themes, 12 months worth of YouTube content. So it gives me all the long form. What I did was I used ChatGPT to juxtapose. Here's what my brand is all about. Here's what my consumer's all about. And now here are the beats and rhythms of society. So here in the United States, every January 1st is New Year's, right? We have dry January where people like to explore sobriety. We've got February is Valentine's Day, March, International Women's Day. You've got all these things that are on the calendar for all people and all brands. kids tend to go to school at the same times. They tend to have the same breaks. Parents have to deal with their kids being home or at school. So we as a society, we all go through very similar beats and rhythms, holidays, birthdays, you know, graduations, weddings, all that kind of stuff. It breaks into these seasons that are very predictable. So all I did was match up my brand to the things in the seasonal calendars that matter to that brand. And then, you know, bring in a little dash of brand purpose and some vision here and there. And all of a sudden, ChatGPT is planning out all my blog posts and all of my YouTube content and all my podcast content. And it does that so that going through the year, as we're recording those things, my community managers know exactly what we're talking about in March and in August and in December, right? So they don't have to overthink it. And my media buyers, when my media buyers go in, they're like, okay, this is beautiful. Okay, in the month of September, it's back to school. So let's do some of this and let's get on this platform. Let's do this ad buy and let's do... So you're making everything much more predictable by breaking it down through the usage of artificial intelligence. But it's not going to be the end all be all. I'm not asking it to write every single TikTok caption for me. I need the community manager to go in there and apply their knowledge of the platform and of our community.
Right, Joe. Now, let me understand, you know, in terms of for the audience, what's the things that they can connect you with for in terms of, you know, social media and marketing communication so that they can make the best of you. Secondly, you know, one thing I wanted to understand, you host a podcast on alcohol-free living, and on the other side, you are launching a cannabis brand. So I want to understand that that difference in that. Well, help us understand that, and for the audience also, what they can connect.
Yeah. So I used to drink, I would say kind of heavily, but not, it wasn't crazy. I wasn't an alcoholic or anything, but I quit drinking 6 years ago. And it was mainly because my doctor told me that I was going to get gout if I didn't. So my yeast intake was super high because of the beer I drank. And that's understandable because I ran AB InBev, Budweiser, Bud Light, Stella for Gary for 5 years. So beer was just all around me all the time. And I quit drinking in 2018, and a few years later, and I hadn't consumed cannabis either in maybe like 15 or 20 years. But then a conversation that I had with a friend kind of opened my eyes to the possibility. And so we were at a bar. I was drinking a non-alcoholic beer, and he was drinking an actual beer. And we got wind that there was a brand called Lagunitas down in Southern California that was they were dry hopping. Not a seltzer water, so it tasted kind of like an India Pale Ale, like an IPA. But they were also putting cannabis in it, so the effect was it would get you high and not drunk. And I started thinking about that, and I was like, interesting. So this thing is going to actually allow you to, you know, not be drunk, but it will give you a little bit of a psychoactive effect. You could drink way more of them if you want because it's very low dose, and it doesn't give you a hangover after the fact, right? So you can be around your wife, you can be around your kids, like you're not sloppy, you're not any of that stuff. And I thought it was a really novel idea because when I think about the two different substances, I'm like, well, you don't have to look very far after some sort of massive crime like a murder or something like that to find alcohol or spousal abuse or something like that. Alcohol is usually involved. You don't really see a lot of those violent crimes associated with people that are on cannabis. And then I started thinking about it some more. And I was like, we've got an epidemic in society with addiction, with technology, with anxiety, with depression, with all these things. A lot of it could be attributed and traced back to mobile phone adoption and social media and things that I've put out there for years and years and years. So I started thinking about the cannabis plant a lot differently, you know, as potentially more overlap with different pockets of wellness and medicinal use. And the more research I did, the more I found out, okay, well, this is a lot better of a substance than we give it credit for. But conversely, society has always glorified usage of alcohol. So right. What we decided to do in our podcast was let's tell the stories, at least up front, you know, focus more on sobriety from alcohol and tell the stories of very successful people that don't drink. And you know, a lot of people, because of what they've been conditioned to think via Hollywood and corporate America, they view, you know, the people that get wildly drunk as the people that are most successful in life. And I can't tell you vehemently enough that that's the exact opposite thing of reality. Most of the people that I know that have had a lot of success in life, they barely drink. And if they do, it's very sparingly because they like to keep their wits about them. So that's what we're doing on our podcast, is we're trying to change the perception of sobriety and make it into a much more positive thing. Meanwhile, we're also introducing some level of thinking that maybe cannabis, it shouldn't be as demonized as it has throughout American history. And maybe it has a lot more benefit than we're giving it credit for. So that's kind of the juxtaposition there. I wouldn't say we're anti anything or pro anything. It's just, we're more enlightened to the fact that alcohol is more damaging than we've ever really given it assignment towards. And cannabis is not nearly as damaging as society would have you believe it.
Right. And on the marketing side, if people want to connect with you, get the best out of you, you know, what is the best way to do so?
I would say just, you know, everybody's different. My handle on social media across almost every platform is Super Quattrone. It's my last name with super in front of it. Once upon a time, back in like 20 years ago, I worked at Home Depot and thought I was going to be a blogger that blogged on the big box warehouse space. And that never materialized, but I like the name Super Quattrone and that stuck. So if you type that into Google or any search engine, that'll take you to my LinkedIn and my Twitter and my Instagram, and you know, just connect with me there and DM me any questions you have. And I'm happy to get in contact with you. And if there's any more in-depth conversations you want to have, or if you want to come on the podcast or something like that, I can share with you my email address and we can get in touch that way.
Wonderful. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.